But it's like having six anime in one, pretty much. And it's, you know, well, six anime and a hentai.
And they all found their way into the same girl. She's a girl.
And a samurai.
She's a nympho. She's a samurai. She's a cat girl.
Yeah, and a demon huntress.
She's a demon huntress. She's a bodyguard.
Yep, all of them.
Is there anything this girl
isn't?
Wait,
is she from a different world? Chazo from Omamori Himari by Aya Ruka, and this is the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. We're joining you. What number is this?
23.
Wow. Dang.
We're almost at a full season.
Scary number 23.
Oh, shit. Okay, so as you can all probably tell, we have three hosts here tonight. I am Chiaki, as I think I've already said, but if not, hi guys, joining me.
My voice needs no introduction.
But if it does, that's Mitsugi.
And I'm Kimiko. Glad to be back.
So, all of us are back from holidays now. We're all getting back into the swing of things. You can find us at aaapodcast.com. That's our main site, the hub, the central computer, as it were.
The motherland.
The promised land, even. We're also on iTunes, Facebook, and Mevio.com. And again, if you either search for Anime Addicts Anonymous or AAA Podcast, you'll find us on any of those. Some announcements, some general housekeeping. We have new forum members. Welcome, Manny Poo. And that's all.
Manny Poo.
Manny Poo.
Nice to meet you, Manny
Poo. I will review your Narutaro for you. Just not today.
Just not today.
Eventually.
Not right now. And we also have some trivia apologies.
Oh yeah, it took me so long to edit the last episode that we never got around to posting a new episode, so there is no winner this week. But there will be winners next week.
Yes, so...
Sorry, my fault, my bad.
We're still getting it back together, but it will be back in the normal swing of things, guys. Just got thrown off a bit. Our episode lineup... This fantastic episode 23, you guys tell me. We're talking about themes in anime, and what we mean is symbols, metaphors, reoccurring themes and meanings of them, and things we particularly like, and just kind of discussing them, what gives depth to anime.
Things that aren't in moe.
Yes.
That aren't in moe.
Really heavy-duty, non-panty shot sort of stuff.
Even though moe itself is a theme, but just not one that we care to pay attention to.
Then we have some impressions. We have Sora no Woto, Dance of the Vampire Bund, and Omamori Himari. Reviews on Suzumiya, Sora no Otoshimo, Otowareru Mono, and Gravitation. So, great episode.
Boy, you read those reviews quick. Is that one anime or four animes?
It's actually one. It's a special kind of anime where you have one episode
with
a really long
title.
Exactly.
It's like a medley of sorts.
Like Higurashi no Naku Kora ni Kai. They're just trying to get longer. It's like, is bigger?
Like the video game Shin Megami Tensei Devil Summoner 2, Ryokuzu Noha versus the Soulless Army.
Exactly like that.
That's gotta be the longest video game title ever.
Wow.
Someone might contest you.
Well, you can. Come to our forum and you can contest me.
You know those Japanese, they like their long titles. They must be compensating. Moving on to themes, symbols, and metaphors in anime. So to start off on a kind of an argumentative note when we're talking about themes and symbols in anime, I kind of thought of this, got into a discussion. It's Type Moon on the forums, it's under General, and Mitsugi mentioned that Eva's not a deep symbolic anime, because I was actually talking about this with him, and Saber asked me to cite it, and this is just kind of what I feel is something that you have to critically analyze anime if you're looking for symbolism. And a lot of people give Evangelion a lot of credit for, like, its deep soul-searching symbolism of Christianity and everything like that. And I'm not saying that, you know, everyone gets their own thing from the anime, but just an excerpt from a book called The Stray Dog of Anime, The Films of Mamoru Oshii. It's by Brian Rowe, published in 2004 by Palgrave Macmillan. So there's my citation. Chapter 3, Angel's Egg, 1985, and it's on page 52 for anyone who goes out and buys this book to question me. While allusions to both religion, both Japanese and Western, are not uncommon in anime, serious explorations of religion are fairly rare. For instance, the TV series and films of Eva made use of Christian symbolism, but this was more marketing gimmick than serious soul-searching, said Kazuya Tsurumaki, the program's assistant director. And I'm not going to read on the quotes on the forums in full, but essentially it's just saying that animes a lot of times will throw in symbolism to be edgy, to set themselves apart, to do something that not other animes are doing, but they're not actually intending to have any kind of deeper meaning to it other than just be flashy, essentially.
Edgy's good, sometimes. Yeah. It's not too edgy. You don't want to break the edge off.
So some things that...
Yeah, you know, like, man, you didn't cross the line, you damn near broke it off.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
You haven't heard that expression?
No. I break the edge off? No.
I haven't either.
Whatever, keep going.
Okay.
Be quiet.
So...
Leave me alone.
So... Preceding this, we're going to talk about things that we feel are quote-unquote legitimate symbols in anime and things that you can talk about as some kind of soul-searching or trying to relay some kind of message about a topic or theme or something like that. And the first one, a man we talked about last episode in depth, is Miyazaki.
Miyazaki.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that the greatest director ever...
Yes.
Would also make use of excellent themes and symbols in his movies.
Every single one of them.
And what kind of themes are prevalent?
Well, if
see,
I may.
I'm glad you asked that question. Please.
If I may. At least on a personal, you know, reflection of Miyazaki's films, every single one of them revolves around one of two main themes. One of which being man versus nature, and the other being... emotional, individual growth, and maturity.
Yes.
Yes.
I agree with you.
Exactly.
Well said. Can you give examples of each?
Yes. A really, really good example of man versus nature, obviously, is Princess Mononoke.
Yes.
Irontown.
Destroying the forest. Killing the forest god.
All of the animals rebelling against
the people.
You know, human.
Literal battles of giant boars. Fighting people with guns.
With the necessary middleman, Ashitaka.
And it starts out in the very beginning with the boar god, who I can't remember, having the bullet in his chest that makes him so full of hatred that he curses Ashitaka.
And when
so
you think
because of man.
And when you think about it, that's really a symbolism for like the whole movie, just that first scene, because the boar, the natural thing, has been cursed, or has been deeply wounded by the false thing, which is a bullet, representative easily of Irontown, even, if you want to talk about literal material. And Ashitaka is pulled into this situation to be a kind of mediator, in a sense. Because
yeah,
he really
is a mediator.
The people try to make peace with this boar, and the boar is not having any of it, but...
Somewhat of a negotiator, too. Mm-hmm. I wish that my negotiation class at my grad school would show Princess Mononoke.
That movie makes me...
Because Ashitaka is on everybody's side, but we're starting to stray away from
his,
that.
His eyes are unclouded by hate.
Yeah. Oh, good. So, good quote. So, how about another example?
Under Man and Nature or under Maturity?
Man and Nature.
Let's say with Man and Nature for...
Let's hammer it in.
All right. Well, I know one of the examples on the list is Future Boy Conan, and I have not seen that, so does Do either of you want to?
Future Boy Conan.
By the way, it was like Miyazaki's first, right?
Yeah, I think it was made in 1978. I'm not 100% sure it's his first, but it was, it's one of his only anime series, not a movie. But Future Boy Conan is an anime where right from the outset, the world has been destroyed by, nuclear war.
And that's another theme we'll get to later, just to say.
Yeah, so it's also post-apocalyptic, but, and it's, Conan kind of is like Ashitaka in that anime, in that he doesn't really hate anybody, but, you know, the bad guys are doing bad things. They're people with guns, and they're just, you know, they're basically continuing to ravage the earth even after it's been destroyed, and he just wants everybody to
get along,
live peacefully on like a, you know, because he grew up on like a little island.
Seems there's always one character like that in these, though.
You know,
the one who
protagonist.
Wants that peace.
Such as Nausicaa.
Oh, yes. See, in Nausicaa, and even in one we're going to talk about after Nausicaa, Ponyo, which is an amazing new film by him, there's the character who not only wants peace, just in general, but wants, you know, nature and man to be able to coincide, which is a big thing. Ashitaka brings it up at the end of Princess Mononoke, but
yes.
In Nausicaa, it's even more so, because their main thing isn't so much that they want to control nature, it's that they want to eradicate all of the other creatures that are a possible threat, not even like a definite threat, but even just the idea of a threat. And Nausicaa, who is our brilliant female protagonist.
The greatest ever.
Oh, yes. She wants there to be this sort of coexistence between the bugs, which everyone assumes are these evil creatures that are going to destroy them if they let them live, and the humans who, you know.
The toxic jungle.
The toxic jungle, which is symbolism in and of itself.
Because all it's doing is purifying the earth.
It's true.
Yes, that's why it's so toxic anyway.
And really, even the toxic jungle is symbolism in that many people take things only for face value. They don't dig deeper. And in the movie, a literal sense, dig deeper because what's occurring is underneath it. But
right.
They don't dig deeper to look into what, in modern day, or in our case, things like the rainforest is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, people look at it face value. They're like, oh, rainforest, right, trees and berries and animals. Okay, chop it down. But they don't dig deeper to see, all of the medicinal cures that could be lying out there, what those species mean for the world and what it means. Not to be too preachy, but just saying possible links that Miyazaki could have been considering and thinking about.
Most definitely.
Also, before we move on, I don't know if Miyazaki intended this or not, but Nausicaa is somewhat of a Christ figure in that movie.
Very much
so. She is killed as a martyr and is reborn, literally.
As their savior, the one that, you know.
That's a big spoiler, but if you haven't seen Nausicaa yet, that movie came out 30 years ago. So.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Whoops, we spoiled the 30-year-old movie that you should have seen anyway, because it's amazing.
Yes.
Is all of his films, all of them.
And also, as a side note again, maybe the best manga ever.
I never read the manga.
I think it's touted as, it's like in the conversation every time. I don't. It's always opinionated, but anyway, so what's next?
Why don't we, do you guys want to move on to one of Miyazaki's other favorite themes, and that's maturity?
Sure. Well, the most obvious one under maturity, personally, is Spirited Away. Because you start off with Chihiro as your standard, maybe, how old is she? Maybe 9 or 10? Maybe younger.
I don't think
than
she's
that.
Older. I don't think she's 9 or 10. She's like 6. She's like 7.
Let's go with 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Very
mature,
know,
for a 7-year-old, but.
Yeah. Your standard, well, in the beginning, your standard 7 or 8-year-old, you know, spoiled brat who doesn't really think beyond her own wants and such, who by the end of the film is, like you said, one of the most mature 7-year-olds I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's all about, you know, growing into who you are, growing into what you're supposed to be, realizing what's more important in life,
right.
Things like that. And he does that, you know, in more than one film.
And there's, regarding Spirited Away, this is something that I kind of want to talk about at a later date, so I won't go too much in depth, but regarding the soft power of anime, and that's the power of anime to go and to permeate different cultures and create interest in the Japanese culture through anime in those cultures that might not have previously looked at that. And Spirited Away is an excellent example and relates to back to the topic because they use so much symbolism and themes of Shinto religions. Having a bathhouse for spirits, you have river spirits, you have tree spirits, you have spirits of everything in that film.
Oh, and the detail that he puts into that.
Exactly.
So
but,
great.
I mean, all of that is very Shinto. That is very traditional Japanese belief system of, you know, this tree has a spirit, that rock has a spirit, this stream has a spirit, that river has a different spirit. So that's another very Shinto theme and symbolism pervading through the movie.
But I mean, he's like that a lot with, you know, keeping very ancient Japanese urban legends involved in a lot of, you know, the plot or a lot of...
Yeah.
You know, very, he's very good about drawing from things like that, you know, either as themes and morals or just, you know, to make things a little bit more interesting. Like the whole, the game that they play where they put their fingers together and you have to break it apart to break the spirit.
Right.
You know, they do that in Spirited Away too, and it's just little details. He's really good about little details, and I love it.
Alright, so we kind of talked enough on Miyazaki. Another director, which we've mentioned before and praised before, is Makoto Shinkai, who's hailed as the quote-unquote new Miyazaki, so seems like
right.
Common sense to pay homage to him in this discussion of themes in anime. And possibly one of the... All of his works, I'd say, are riddled with symbolism.
Oh, yes.
Probably one of the most notable is his most recent feature film-length work, Byosuko 5 Centimeters, or 5 Centimeters Per Second.
Yeah, in the behind-the-scenes interview with him, he discusses how all of his movies have an overarching theme, and I believe that...
Byosuko's was the theme of distance.
Distance.
And how sometimes the physical distance between the two main characters was not representative of the distance between their hearts, or vice versa.
And Voices of a Distant Star, the theme was time, as
oh,
represented
yes.
by the increasingly longer amount of time it took for the text messages to be sent. But one of the... I was trying to think of specific examples of distance in Byosoku, and I can only think of one, and it was the scene in the second OVA where... the character's looking up at the sky and the rocket ship's taking off, and like then the exhaust from the rocket ship makes a white line across the sky and it kind of splits the sky in half. Half the sky is darker than the other. You know, and you could argue, oh, lighting from the sun or whatever, but in reality, this is a very subtle symbol of the distance between the boy and the girl that he loves who's still in Tokyo or wherever.
That symbolic separation.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also see this... You see it a number of times, and it's very subtle sometimes, and of course people can accuse you of looking for things, but I remember one time, it was the boy, the protagonist, and then the girl who had a crush or had a love interest in him, but he didn't reciprocate, and they were walking together, and he looked up, and again the moon was cut in half, but this time by a power line.
Right.
And it's just subtle imagery like that that I think... Shinkai really deserves praise for when it comes to symbols and things like that.
That kind of stuff's not a mistake.
Almost definitely.
He does it again at the end with the train.
Yeah.
Splits the two, I shouldn't give too many spoilers, but the train is a symbol.
Probably
so,
the biggest symbol, because it's, you know, the full circle seen in the beginning and at the end.
Right.
Yeah.
So that movie's got some good stuff.
But I mean, another theme that he goes into depth in all of his movies, I think, or all of the ones that I've seen, is that sense of wanting something that you can't quite get to, like something that's just out of your reach.
Longing,
that is a great word for it. Specifically, you know, a good symbol of that within the film, even though the theme is present everywhere, is in A Place Promised in Our Early Days. The tower that exists as a main focal point of the movie,
mm-hmm.
You know, it can be seen from anywhere in Japan, but it's always, you know, just beyond what they can reach. It's like it's looming, like the memories that are haunting them. You know, it's that sort of blunt symbol of that.
Thank you, Makoto Shinkai, for all of your genius
wonderment.
Writing.
Your brilliance.
One of the things I mentioned earlier that I would come back to was when we were talking about Nazca, I think it was, being post-apocalyptic or having the end of the world kind of being involved.
Yes.
And oh, yeah. That's a theme that is so prevalent through anime. Just to name a few. Eva, which I already mentioned, deals with the end of the world. Now and then, here and there, has a post-apocalyptic world set up.
Right.
Akira, you have that big crater throughout the whole movie of Tokyo, which, while it might not be a world apocalypse for their world, in a sense, their city world, it was an apocalypse.
Well, that movie actually has two scenes of apocalypse.
Yeah.
It blows up in the beginning, and it blows up at the end.
Oh, wonderful.
So it's like... sucks to be them. That movie's also old. Sorry for the spoiler, but Akira, come on.
Grave of the Fireflies, dealing with firebombing and things being destroyed. Also, Barefoot Gen, which deals with the A-bomb. Which, again, not a world apocalypse, but definitely a massive ending, quote-unquote. Nausicaa, and even things like Dragon Ball Z, even series that you might not really take seriously. In Dragon Ball Z, every saga, the world is going to end if they don't defeat Frieza or Cell.
Yeah, it does end.
It does end at some point.
Boo blows the earth up towards the end of DBZ.
Yeah. So, this fascination with the apocalypse, I find really interesting. And there's a great book that I really love referencing when I talk about anime, and it's called Anime From Akira to Howl's Moving Castle. It's by Susan J. Napier, and she's just written great things on anime. But chapter 13 in this book is called Waiting for the End of the World, Apocalyptic Identity, and she discusses this Japanese fascination with the apocalypse. And it's really an interesting phenomena, because if you look at Japanese culture, Buddhist, Shinto, this kind of apocalyptic notion doesn't really exist for them. Where, I mean, even in Western society and Christianity, there is kind of the end of the world will come, judgment day will come, and, you know, they even mentioned the apocalypse and the seven signs of the apocalypse. That is Christianity,
yeah.
Right? Okay, making sure I'm not talking out my ass. but that doesn't exist within Buddhist and Shinto. It's very much rebirth, cycle of life, there is no definite ending, you know, there's always a beginning. And one of the things that she talks about was, going back to kind of Barefoot Gen, was the fact that Japan is one of the few countries to have suffered, and, well, one of the few, the only country to have ever suffered an A-bomb attack, to have ever had that kind of, not once, but twice, and to have ever had that kind of really incredibly catastrophic event. And I'm not saying that there haven't been equally, perhaps, catastrophic events in the course of history, but that was a one moment it was there and one moment it was not, very much like an apocalypse. So that was one of the things she cited as a reason, and it's definitely a theme throughout anime. I don't know if you guys have any other ideas of why it might reoccur or anything like that you want to say.
Well, I mean, the apocalypse in general is a fascination. It's something that we honestly don't know if it's going to happen.
Even more these days with, like, the Mayan calendar
and
the things are... I saw a car commercial talking about the apocalypse the other day.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's what they were actually talking about in the commercial, is they were saying the Mayan calendar says the world's going to end in 2012, so that gives you just enough time to stock up on, you know, water, safety clothing, and a new Range Rover. It was
a Dodge Charger.
Or Dodge
wow.
Charger for your
Thanks,
getaway
Dodge.
Vehicle.
Thanks. That's great.
So just any other symbols? I mean, I guess we could kind of open the floor, wrap up the discussion that you guys want to talk about.
Okay, well, there's a bunch of symbols that I want to touch upon that I have written. And, of course, Kimiko, throw your own symbols in with me. But these are symbols from specific animes. The first one is Now and Then Here and There, which is a somewhat... It's not really that old, but it came out, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe, something like that. This is more for people that have specifically seen these animes. But Shuzo Matsutani, the main character of that anime, really is a symbol of hope, I think, throughout the whole course of it. And I realize that neither of you two have seen it, I don't think, but he really is just this very positive character in a situation that is just foobar, completely foobar. And there's another character in the anime whose name is Sarah, who is certainly above anything else, is a symbol of forgiveness, I think, is her main deal. You know, being able to forgive the people that did horrible things to her towards the end of the series. It's one of my favorite animes, so I don't want to spoil it too much because it's kind of unknown, so I figure most people haven't seen it. But,
And what's its name again?
Now and Then Here and There.
Now and Then Here and
It's
There.
A very difficult anime to watch. If you're not capable of watching, like, things that are dark or very serious, you will not make it very far through this anime. But, Princess Mononoke, again, Ashitaka's arm.
Oh, yeah.
Which keeps flaring up every time he does something that's, like, hateful.
Oh, yeah.
Symbol of hatred, I think.
How it'll legitimately start moving of its own accord when he's about to commit an act of some sort of violence or pain.
The curse from the boar, the hatred curse,
touches
his arm, and his arm becomes a symbol of hatred that pretty prevalent.
Which is interesting, because he does say that he's come to see with eyes unclouded by hate, but hate rests within him.
Right.
Even if it's not connected entirely to him. It's interesting.
Honey and Clover... Which I think you've seen that, right?
Bits and pieces, not enough to...
Well, you should know this, because the very first scene in the whole anime has a wheel spinning.
That is true.
And Honey and Clover is about college students that are having a difficult time moving on from college in their lives. And so the wheel, I feel like, is a symbol of continuance.
I can see that.
A way of... they bring the wheel back, like, 30 times for just no reason. They just have a wheel spinning all of a sudden. So it's like... Or when someone makes, when someone makes like a breakthrough in their life, they'll share the wheel. And also,
On that, if I may,
sure.
There's a movie called Origin, Spirits of the Past, which is a great film, which hits not only on the apocalyptic and the man versus nature, but on another theme that is similar to Honey and Clover, which is, you know, moving on and letting go of the past.
Right. I actually have seen that. That's the one where it's like in the forest, right?
Yeah. And like you can give your allegiance to the forest, and they'll give you special powers and
this
craziness. But it's actually a pretty good, you know, film in terms of theme and moral.
Sure.
Sure, whatever you say.
I can't remember that much about it, but I have seen it. Samurai X has a good symbol in it. Kenshin's scar, before he gets the second half of it, bleeds every time he does something.
Well, that's
every time he murders somebody, so it's kind of like...
Intense.
It's similar to Ashitaka's arm, I think.
Yeah, what grows almost.
Right. Until he gets the second half of it, then it stops bleeding. But,
What sort of symbolism that?
That's probably symbolism also, but... in an anime that everybody hopefully has seen, but I know no one has, Hibone Renmei, which is an anime that the entire anime is a symbol, is a metaphor for purgatory. The entire thing. I'm convinced. I mean, it's one of those animes where everybody can have a different interpretation of what it's about, but I have had discussions with my friends about it, and that's what I have come to understand from it. But you've got people with gray wings as opposed to white wings. You've got crows throughout it, which if you've seen it, I think are a symbol of like the people that have been left behind. Because, you know, everyone in the anime has died at some point, and the crows symbolize the people that they left behind, I think.
You know, black crows will symbolize things like that all the time.
Really?
Yeah, black crows are a symbol. I mean, in Baccano, you've got the black crow as the symbol. I want to say it's like a symbol for Huey Lafere. Chane, you know, it's that sort of a black crow surrounded by a bunch of white doves or something like that. It's always a symbol for something.
Right, and finally, the town walls that surround the town of Hibone Renmei, I think, symbolize restriction. It's purgatory. They're not allowed to cross the walls.
Mm.
So...
Right.
That's my interpretation of the walls. There's so much more in Hibone. We can have a whole podcast about that. But, and finally, as Chiaki pointed out, in Spice and Wolf...
In Spice and Wolf, the main character is, of course, Horo, who is a wolf deity. And... She is the deity which protects the harvest, the grain of this medieval town. And in Japanese Shinto religion, they have a deity called Inari, who is the deity of rice. And that is a fox, I believe. But Horo, you know, with her red ears and her red tail, foxes and wolves, I'm not trying to say they're the same, but there is kind of a connection there, you know. Inari protecting rice and grain, the main source of food for the ancient people of Japan, and then Horo, who's a similar
dog, fox, wolf deity who's protecting grain, which was, of course, the main food source of medieval times. So I kind of drew that connection. But I think there's a lot of connections that can be drawn in anime to many things, be it intentional or not. And I think they're all worth being discussed, so if anyone has Symbol in Anime that they want to talk about, please come to us on the forums.
Maybe something we overlooked in something we've already been talking about.
Or something you feel that we got completely wrong.
Oh my god, please, I love talking about this stuff.
So,
arguments, yes.
So please come to us on the forums, we'd love to hear from you all. And right now we're going to take a short news break with Mitsugi, and we'll be back later for some impressions.
Bandai Namco Holdings announced on Tuesday its group restart plan as a blueprint for future growth after reporting a substantial loss in its latest financial statement. Financial figures for the period between April and December of 2009 on Tuesday were announced. Sales had dropped 10.4% from the same period the year before, or about $3.12 billion. The company also estimated that sales for the entire fiscal year ending March 2010 would be about 11% lower, or about $4.2 billion. The various Bandai Namco Group companies will be reorganized this April. The game and the music businesses will be unified under the umbrella of Content Business after each division is put under review. About 630 people, or 10% of the Bandai Namco Group companies' workforce, will lose their jobs. The company hopes to trim about 8 billion yen, or $90 million, in its expenses. In other financial news, Navare Corporation, the company of the anime licensing and distribution company Funimation, announced on Monday that it had a net decrease in sales for the third quarter of fiscal year 2010, which ended on December 31st. Navare's net quarter sales were down 22% and year-to-date sales down 19% compared to last year. In some improvements, Navare reported that net income increased to $7.2 million this quarter compared to a net loss of nearly $50 million in the same quarter last year. The company cited a weaker release schedule and weak general DVD market sales as a cause for the decline. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has announced its nominations for the 82nd Academy Awards on Tuesday morning, and unfortunately Hayao Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli's Ponyo anime film is not among the five nominated films in the animated feature film category. The five nominated films are Coraline, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Princess and the Frog, The Secret of Kells, and Up. Miyazaki's two previous films, Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle, were both nominated for Oscars, and Spirited Away won the animated feature film category in 2003.
That's it for the news for now. Let's get back to the show.
Thank you, Mitsugi, for those gems of news.
You're welcome.
Okay, so since you're talking, would you like to talk some more?
No.
Well, you're going to have to.
I'm not going to.
Do I need to be you? Lightning from the sky. Anyways.
Darts from the eyes.
So, we have some impressions, Mitsugi.
Yeah. So, my first impression is Sora no Oto. And for some reason, each of the syllables has a hyphen between it. So it's Sora no Oto. I think it's because it's a music anime, and so it's like Do, Re, Mi, Fa, So, La, Ti, Do.
We just had some singing.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. So it's a 12-episode anime. Came out on the 4th of January. The director is Mamoru Kanbei, who, for some odd reason, was the director of Elfen Lied, which is, like, okay, his most well-known anime, probably. And this anime is, nor is it, it's not violent, nor is it sci-fi, nor is it anything that Elfen Lied is.
Wow.
So this guy is really out there. And, The studio is A1 Pictures, which was responsible for Kanagi and Fairy Tail. Those are some recent ones.
Oh, anyway. I already have an impression of this studio.
So here's the storyline for the first two episodes. Sorami Kanata is a girl who joins the army so she can learn trumpet. Which is kind of a dumb reason to join the army. That's a
really bad reason to join the army.
Hey.
Don't do this at home.
No college. She doesn't care about college. It's not to get in shape. It's not because her life needs to be turned around. She doesn't need the money. She just wants to learn trumpet.
That's it.
Well, you know.
Isn't that, like, the one you don't want to be in the army is the one playing the trumpet? Aren't you, like...
Yeah, you're, like, kind of,
oh,
like...
Oh, no, I'm thinking, like, the bugle boy.
Anyway, so allow me to continue.
Sorry.
She gets assigned to a small town and their time hair heralding bastion, where they basically play the role of roosters. They just kind of play trumpet and stuff at dawn and at dusk. There are other girls in the bastion with her. Kazumiya Ryo is also in the bastion. She's the captain and will quote-unquote teach Kanata the trumpet because she sucks bad. Well, I mean, like, it's like an anime, the girl always sucks at whatever she's doing. Like,
if she wants to sing... She has to be really terrible at singing.
Well, it's not cute otherwise. Like, you have to be a bad cook.
And there has to be something that miraculously makes you amazing.
Right.
You
know,
after, so, like a fairy.
The first episode really focuses on the folklore behind the town. I'm sure they're just kind of trying to create some flavor for it. Something about a fire demon and maidens putting out the fire and something. And then the second episode introduces the rest of the girls. All of them are girls. There's no guy characters.
Of course, this is the military. The female...
All-field
military.
So, there's a tank commander, a pilot, whose name is Kanagi. I don't know if that's a similarity or not. What do you think?
I think the studio is rubbing its own back.
Anyway, and a gunner. And they have a busted-ass tank that will never run because they can't find parts for it. And, basically, this anime is basically K-On!, which came out, like, 6 months ago. Even the characters look identical. Literally, there's no difference between the main character Kanata and the stupid girl from the main character from K-On! Who can't play the guitar. They're the exact
can't play
same
the guitar, can't play the trumpet
character. The thing is, neither the director or the studio are involved in K-On!, not that I know of.
So they stole it.
They stole it.
Those and bastards.
Also, in this anime, first episode. How about them boob jokes?
Oh, Jesus Christ, not another one.
They only did it once.
They only did it once in the first episode of Sacred Blacksmith, but then they did it once every other freaking episode.
There was a scene where the girl was at breakfast, and she was, like, looked at herself, and then all the other girls had huge boobs, and she has, like, tiny ones, of course.
Oh, that sounds really good.
My other special note, another one I have, is that this anime will never have any combat in it. I guarantee it. This is a prediction. It's about the military, they have guns, they have a tank that doesn't work. Because it has no treads or legs or whatever. It's kind of like a Tachikomo without legs on it. They don't have the parts, no one likes them in the army division, so they don't ever get any supplies. There will never be any combat. This anime is just going to be a fluff fest that they're just going to flutter their way through it.
Fluff fest!
And that's it. My last comment, special comment, is that if I could describe the anime so far in one word after three episodes, it would be uneventful.
Ooh.
Because the first episode was just her getting to the town and sucking at the trumpet. The second episode was them going on a ghost hunt because they were spooked by a ghost and ended up being an owl. And then the third episode was the girl getting sick and, like, a tiny bit of backstory that was kind of not interesting.
Isn't it good to know that they're spending, like, their time in this anime on good things?
The only good things about this anime is that the music is fairly good, even if most of it's, like, classical music that they stole from, like, you know, Pacabo and stuff. So, I think you can watch this anime if you liked K-On!, or if you like dumb girls, or if you like music, because otherwise you're not gonna like this anime. It'll be not up your alley. It's a fluff anime, so.
Thank you, Mitsugi, for that review on the anime that does nothing. So far.
Maybe it will. Maybe there'll be a big gunfight and then we'll die. That'll make the anime really good.
Okay. Change everything.
So, Kimiko, do you have an anime that's doing something?
It's doing something, alright. it's called Omamori Himari. And
If I had to define what impression I got from Omamori Himari, I would say a skip, jump, and a hop away from a hentai. Really.
It's bad, so it's like, but that's the impression.
So it's like Queen's Blade.
Sure.
Okay. we'll do that one later in a later episode.
Basically, Omamori Himari, I don't know, it's kind of like six anime in one. I mean, listen to what the Wikipedia, you know, synopsis of it is. About a boy whose life is turned around on his 16th birthday when a mysterious girl appears as his bodyguard against the demons that are now trying to kill him. From the day of his 16th birthday, the charm that was supposed to protect him is said to not be able to anymore. And Himari appears in Yuto's life. Himari is a cat spirit, samurai girl, and demon huntress who, aside from wanting to copulate with him madly, swears to protect Yuto. But there is one small problem. Yuto has a severe allergic reaction to cats.
Didn't we just have an anime about being allergic to cats?
We did. It was called Nyankoi. And
Nyankoi!
There's always something to do with cats. No. But it's like having six anime in one. Pretty much. And it's, you know, well, six anime and a hentai.
And they all found their way into the same girl. She's a girl.
And a samurai.
She's a nympho. She's a samurai. She's a cat girl.
Yeah, and a demon huntress.
She's a demon huntress. She's a bodyguard.
Yep, all of them.
Is there anything this girl
isn't?
Wait,
is she from a different world? Because you said she, like, showed up.
Well, I actually don't know. I mean, after the third,
Well, if she's a cat girl, she might be.
I'm assuming that she's either from a different world or, like, from a spirit world thing.
So let's say from a different world too.
Yeah, let's just throw that in there.
Let's see how many cliches they can just shove into one.
And I'm looking for pictures because I like cat girls.
And like, I'm talking, when I say like skip, jump, and a hop away from a hentai, you know, like we are 2 seconds away from like full frontal nudity, like around every corner. We have, you know, more than what is, you know, decent for panty shots, because I mean there's the occasional panty shot and then there's like a panty shot every scene. They even have that awkward like music.
They do.
Oh
my god. Do they really?
They really do.
Oh my god.
but you know, other than that, it looks freakishly predictable, like from the get-go. It's just, you know, everything about it is kind of
pointless. I worry
when
in the genre list it has harem. That just makes me worry for an anime deep in my soul.
Yeah, you may want to be a little bit wary when it has harem in the genre.
Yeah, unless that's what you're looking for, which then by all means.
Oh, yes. I mean, if what you want are a million panty shots per episode and, you know.
No story.
No story at all.
Is she a well-endowed cat girl?
Actually, yes. And, surprisingly enough, or not really surprisingly, actually, but the main girl character who's in love with Yuto, she actually doesn't have very large boobs. And so...
Well, she's doomed.
The cat girl does, and that starts a lot of rivalry between the three.
Of course.
Of
it
course.
It is all about the tatas.
All.
Which,
all about.
Which comes back to the anime I'll be doing an impression on next episode called Chubra.
It has bra in the title, people. Come on.
But anyway, sorry, back to your anime.
Actually, that's pretty much all I can really say about it.
So would you recommend this anime to like, me?
Yes.
Knowing what you know of, like, my taste?
I would say feel free to enjoy the random panty shots, but really, there is nothing here.
So it's just mindless?
Absolutely nothing. It is more than mindless.
It's like,
you're watching it going, why does this exist?
Doesn't it suck that you have to watch the rest of it?
Yeah, try not to think about that.
If it gets
actually
really bad, you can always abandon it like I did Confer.
I might.
And just give it, might as well be a hentai, because if it's just a skip and a jump away, maybe it should be.
Maybe it will become one, and we just didn't realize it, because it gets close.
It would probably be better if it did become a hentai.
Alright, so Mitsugi has another impression.
Yes.
And this one has vampire in the title, so I'm really interested to see what Mitsugi has to say about this, because he has some distinct opinions on vampire animes.
It's called Dance and the Vampire Bund.
Bund?
Bund. I believe that's a... I don't know what that... I don't know.
Hold on. Dictionary.com.
Bund. Yeah, Google the origin of that word.
Yeah, make sure it's Bund and not Bunt.
B-U-N-D.
Because Bundkick, I'm assuming,
all
is
right.
not...
I Googled define Bund. The General Jewish Labor Union of Lithuania, Poland, and Russia.
I don't think that's quite right.
Boond. A league or confederacy?
So a boond is a league or confederacy, apparently. It came out on the 7th. It's 12 episodes. The director is Akiyuki Shimbo, who did Lyrical Nanoha, probably the most well-known anime, and it's by the animation studio Shaft, which has done too many animes to name off. But the first episode starts on a TV variety show, the whole episode is, discussing whether or not vampires exist. And the topic has been brought up because there have been a series of violent crimes in the area that resemble vampire killings, I guess. And there's a panel of experts on the show that give their, like, medical opinion or whatever, and whether or not vampires exist, and then they vote, and whichever... The consensus is, like, apparently the word of God, that whether or not they exist. Basically, in the first episode, one of the panelists turns into a vampire, and the vampire queen, Mina Teps, happens to be in the audience. She basically goes and kills the vampire. In the second episode, Mina Teps is building a special small district island outside of Tokyo, and as a result, she's being hunted. She's a target for assassination, essentially. And a student of a certain school named Akira, who has amnesia, of course, turns out to be a werewolf, and also has been sworn to protect her, and he gets his memory back throughout the episode.
Of course.
And at the start of episode 3, Mina joins his school, of course, but not as a student.
Oh.
And not as a teacher.
Oh.
So I won't say anything else besides that. I had said before that I thought this anime was going to be like, I was unsure about it because it had pictures of like really violent, very, very, really, really violent images, pictures of her like thinking and pictures of her like being sexual. But she has the body of like a 7-year-old. So
that doesn't mean that it can't be sexual.
Well, up till now, there really isn't a whole lot of sexuality in it. She's
sad but true.
She's a vampire, so she's basically timeless. I mean, she could be like 1,000 years old. But my special comment for this anime is that for an anime that I thought was about a somewhat serious subject matter, it really seems pretty trivial. I mean, we haven't really had anything happen so far that would lead me to believe that this anime is going to be anything except people attacking Mina Teps as vampires and then having the guy kill them, killing the monsters in ways, and the fight scenes aren't even good.
Mm.
It's kind of like Speed Grapher, and that there's like a girl, and all these different monsters are going to show up and attack them, and then the guy that's with her is going to take them out. And then throughout the show, she's probably going to keep building her federation. The anime's alright. It's better than the last one. I think if you like vampire anime, you can probably pick this one up. If you're expecting like a really action-packed, violent anime, you might not get what you want out of it. That's my opinion. Up till now. Unless it has like a complete 180. We spent an entire episode like dealing with the school BS. You know, typical. So, that's my impression of Dance in the Vampire Bund. It's alright. I'm not sure which way to go. It's either going to be awful, it'll do nothing and be boring, or it'll end up taking some original turn and be pretty interesting, so... We'll find out.
Not bad.
All right, excellent. So that's all we have for impressions. We're going to take a short break again with Mitsugi for the news, and then we will be back bringing you reviews in the final segment of the podcast. So stay tuned.
The Nikkan Sports newspaper is reporting on Saturday that the ending scene for the ongoing anime Winter Sonata television series will be filmed in live action. Yong Joon-bae and Ji-woo Choi, the stars of the 2002 live-action Korean drama that actually inspired the anime, will be appearing in the new live-action footage when it airs on April 24th. The new ending in the 26th episode will cover a part of the story that was not in the original Korean drama. Winter Sonata's original drama and the 26-episode series both follow a girl named Yu Jin Jung and her male classmate Jun Song Kong as tragedy and angst befalls them and those around them in the years between high school and young adulthood. The official website for the Eden of the East anime franchise has begun streaming a 1-minute trailer for the second theatrical film sequel on Monday. This trailer is also streaming online at juiz.jp/blog. Eden of the East Movie 1, The King of Eden, opened throughout Japan on December 19th. Funimation announced at the Otakon event last July that it licensed the original television series for North America. That's it for the news for now. Let's get back to the show.
Welcome back. Thank you, Mitsugi, again for keeping us up to date with the news.
You're welcome.
Now it's time to hook you guys up with reviews in the house.
Much better.
I promise I'll never do that ever again. Okay, I'm going to start us off because I haven't talked nearly enough. And I know you all love to hear my voice. So I'm going to review an anime called Utaware Ru Mono, or as most people like to call it, Utaware Ru Mono. Because it has the weirdest title ever.
It means the one being sung.
Yes, it does.
Sung? Sung. Like you can sing, like, upon a person.
Okay.
You know? Like, you know, Jesus is sung because we said there are songs about him. And
okay.
We got it.
So, the anime follows, the main character is Hakuoro. And he wakes up and he has a mask attached to his face and he can't remember anything about who he is, where he was, kind of thing. And he's found by Iruru, who is, I know, the names are fantastic, who is the daughter of...
She's like the medicine girl.
Yeah. She's the daughter of essentially the shaman or the medicine person of the village. And she takes him back, and they nurse him back to health, and he becomes part of the village, and he learns about this empire, and it's being repressed, and, like, pretty much starts a rebellion, and it does kind of have an epicness to it, in that, you know, in the course of the story, not to give too many spoilers, but there's, you know, rebellions, there's changes in power, things like that. You have, these gathering of warriors and things like that behind him, and some of them actually have pretty cool backstories they didn't shirk too much on.
I just have one thing to say.
Huh.
Rockshy!
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 Okay.
Wait, don't we mean Iceman?
I know. Alright. So, I mean, the anime is pretty good. It has some cliches, like Iruru and her sister Aruru are, I know, they are so creative with names. They have, like, cat-like ears, or some people call them dog girl. I can't tell the difference between a cat girl and a dog girl. I guess it's because they have, like, furrier tails. But, man, I wish Hatsuke was here. Anyways.
She would throw this up.
She would be all over this.
She would know.
She'll be back next week.
But they have, I mean, it has cliches, but it's an interesting watch. It has some pretty good action sequences in
it. It does have good action sequences.
It has some good action. It has some epicness to it. There's a lot of... I mean, it has the amnesia cliche, but that does add a lot of kind of a drama suspense to it, because you're slowly figuring out who this man is and his past while he's, you know, leading this rebellion, and then later on. It came out in 2006. It's a 26-episode series. And here's my main critique with this series. For the first 24... or so episodes? No, probably more like 22 episodes. And I'm sorry if this is a spoiler, but I don't care. I need to get this off my chest.
Spoiler alert.
For the first 22 or so episodes, it takes place in, like, this almost, like, medieval-type fantasy setting. And then the last 4 or 5 episodes, something like that, there's a good, a decent amount of time right at the very end where the entire setting changes without any kind of word or any kind of explanation, and then they spend some time on it, and then the whole story ends. and you're like, what the hell was that? That's like kind of the final note for the series, and I realize there's probably a lot going on in what happened, but it was done so abruptly without any kind of explanation, and then it just ended that the ending is my major critique of it. Whatever they were trying to do with it, I don't think they succeeded really well, and it was just like, where did that come from? Like, we watched this in our anime club, and everyone had the same opinion all at once of, are we watching the same anime? Did anyone change the channel? Did I download the wrong episode? So, I'm going to give this... I'm going to give it 3.5 Masked Men out of 5. Because I don't think it's good enough to get a 4 or higher, but it is definitely worth a watch, probably. And there might be more symbolism.
And just in case you're wondering, there's an OVA coming out right now of this anime, but it does not address the freakish
what the hell ending.
Injection of sci-fi that is the end of this anime.
Where this masked man in, like, feudal times became Iceman. Anyways. Oh, one final note. The main character.
Thanks, Maverick.
Uh-huh. One final note, to wrap it up. The main character, man, he fights with a fan. How cool is that?
Is it a bladed fan?
It's like a regular fan.
He's like Juge Leon from, Remeth from Dynasty Warriors.
At least if it was a bladed fan. Those things are the shit.
Alright, so, I know you both each have reviews.
Rekka, I'm doing this because I told you I would. And we had discussion about it. It's been mentioned on the forum so many times, we haven't reviewed it. The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya is an anime that came out, I don't know the date, I'm going to say 2007, just a guess.
And everyone in Japan knows and loves this anime.
And everybody here should have seen it already. This anime swallowed up the entire year it came out in.
Yeah.
There are still people walking around wearing those headphones.
Yes. So, Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya is a little bit more in-depth than it looks. It's a story about a girl, Haruhi, who basically is God, essentially. And all the other characters in the anime either exist to study her or to make sure that she doesn't get bored and wish the world didn't exist, because if she did wish that, it would cease to exist.
Damn.
That's the plot summary. So, that's kind of original, which is a good thing. So, what else about this anime makes it so amazing? Well, first of all, I think its execution is really good. The description of Haruhi in the beginning by Kyon is really well done. The way they show her, like, her hair is different every day, and the way that they flesh her out as a character. She's a really well fleshed out character. Her personality is really well executed. It's got really good animation. The music is great. The production values are through the roof. The end of the series is great. They have one of my favorite episodes was at the end when they have the rock concert. The drawbacks on the anime, I think, are that it takes place in a school, mostly.
One thing to say that might not be a drawback, but the way it was originally released was it was non-sequential, which means you might start with episode 2, then go into episode 4, then go back to episode 1. So, and that was the way it was originally released. Mm-hmm. Now, you can get them where fan subbers, or I think it might have even been released in a box set, in order. But that's something to say, too, for people who are watching it, if they do get the non-sequential one so that they realize that.
I think it was re-released in order later.
Yeah, I think it was, too.
But the anime, it's got a lot of, like, filler-type episodes in it. Once you establish the main plot line of her being God and everyone else just existing for her amusement, they just basically throw a filler in there to show ways that she's entertained. Like, one episode was a baseball game at the school. One episode was like a lot of the episodes take place like in her little club. One of them was like a murder mystery two-parter on an island, which kind of reminds me of Umineko no Nakagoro ni, now that I'm thinking about it. And so, you know, even though it's got a lot of originality and pretty much everything else works in its favor, it's a little bit fluffy in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you give it?
I would give it probably 4.5 Haruhi Suzumiya hairstyles out of 5, just because I don't...
You don't want to piss off the masses?
I don't see anybody, like, if the anime had a little more, like, hard substance in it throughout the course of it, we're talking, like, an overly exceptional anime.
Yeah.
I think. But because they, I feel like the creators were a little bit complacent with the excellent idea that they came up with, they just kind of let it ride, rather than supplementing it with other important things. Like, there are important things, you know, characters from the past, characters from the future, but in the end, it all centers around her being God. And other than her being bored, there really wasn't much of a conflict either, I don't think.
Okay, so Kimiko, you want to give us one to round us out?
Most definitely. A little bit of a blast from the past. I hit on it slightly, a couple of podcasts ago, and it's called Gravitation. Just to start it off, for those of you who aren't a fan of yaoi, avoid. It's not legitimate yaoi. It's what's the other one? Shonen Ai. Because it's, you know, you don't actually see any acts of
Might as well be.
They certainly might as well be. So Gravitation is basically, it revolves around the character Suichi Shindo, and he is attempting to become the next big music icon in Japan with his band Bad Luck, which by band I mean friend hero who plays the guitar. And he wants to be able to write epic music, but for some reason can't.
Because he has no talent.
Because he had,
yes,
he can sing. He can sing. He just can't write. And he tries his hand at writing a love song, and he's in the park by himself. And the paper that he's writing the love song on just kind of like blows away and lands at the feet of the love interest, Ariyuki.
Is that a guy?
Yes, obviously. Shonen.
Okay.
But he's an author, like a really, really famous author. And he looks at the paper and reads the love song, tells him that it is the worst shit he's ever read ever in his life, and then leaves.
What a jackass.
Very much so.
Damn.
So the whole beginning of the series is Suichi trying to prove this guy wrong, and then ultimately finding himself in his life, and, you know, both of them getting into a really, really strange and really reluctant relationship, and through him, Suichi's band becoming more popular and him becoming actually a very well-known Japanese, you know, pop-ish artist. And it's, you know, it's really cool. The manga goes on a little bit further than what the anime does, but both of which are, it's a pretty interesting story, very slice of life, not much happens outside of, you know, realism and, you know, a romantic story. But the characters are great. Specifically Ryuichi Sakuma, which is Suichi's idol from a band called Niddle Grasper, and he is absolutely incredible, like a 5-year-old in a 30-year-old's body, and it's adorable. It's worth a watch. I'm gonna say four crazy lead singers in epic Japanese pop bands out of 5.
Awesome. Yep. And that
right up the top, 3.5, 4, 4.5.
Yeah, that was a pretty good run, guys.
In the right order, too, I think.
Yeah. So, that rounds out our podcast. Again, you can find us at aaapodcast.com. That's kind of the major hub. We have links to everything. Our newest episode is right on the top of the front page. We're also on iTunes, Facebook, and Mevio. Again, you can either search for Anime Addicts Anonymous Podcast or just AAA Podcast. Probably the latter will be easier to find us with and shorter to type. on our forums, too, we have a button right at the top right hand of the page, which will take you to our forums. Come say hello, join in our monthly trivia, get free anime stuff.
Who doesn't love that, right?
Exactly. So, taking us out is the closing song to Baka to Testo Shokanju, Baka Go Home by Milk Tub. That sounds dirty.
Wow.
A little bit. All right, guys, thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Johnny.
Until then, bye. Hey,
次に目のこと会社の名前